Hello and welcome to The Story Pilgrim. Going to battle. Intrigued? Well, you should be. First of all, thank you for being here. Please make sure that you are following this passion project of mine. Click on the follow button, rate me. Go on, I dare you. You see those little stars below? Go on, just scroll down. Keep going. Yeah, those stars. Make sure that all five are highlighted. And write me a great review. Please. It means a lot. Oh, and also share. You know, I'm going to ask you, just tell one person. Just one person about the Story Pilgrim. Again, I dare you. Now, battle. Going to battle. Not into. Well, technically, actually, I did go into battle. But battle the place. 9.5 miles from Hastings to where the Battle of Hastings took place in 1066. It's just up the coast from me, so I decided to pay it a visit. It is a very calm day here today in Hastings. I've driven from Brighton across to Hastings and I'm about to go to battle, literally. Going to battle. I'm going to walk up to battle. It's about 9.5 miles. I'll tell you why in a bit. But here I am in Hastings. It's very, well, three miles of a seaside resort. It's been settled here for over 1,000 years. Pebble Beach, just like Brighton, has a little pier, just like Brighton. Not as grand as the Brighton Palace Pier. There's doesn't look to be much on it. It looks to be just a few beach huts and a very shabby looking building. Has the steepest funicular in the UK. There's cliffs down there further to the east. So why come over to Hastings and walk to battle? Well, I mean, the Battle of Hastings is arguably the most decisive battle that's ever been fought on British soil. It's the last successful invasion of England. William, Duke of Normandy, defeats the Saxon army, kills the king, Harold, and seizes the throne. William then goes on to impose the Norman ruling class, and he basically introduces common law. There's a huge building campaign, which is designed to like impose and emphasize the Norman rule. So just like the widespread construction of castles, cathedrals, abbeys and churches throughout England. So it's very, very significant in English history. And we're walking up to battle because that is the site of the Battle of Hastings. It didn't actually happen in Hastings. It's about 9.5 miles outside. So I'm gonna walk my way up there. We'll talk a little bit about William, a little bit about Harold, and probably a lot more about what's on my mind. Somebody swimming in the sea. It's 9 o'clock, it's 9:10 in the morning, and there's a very brave soul out there. I mean, it's a very calm day, so why not? But it ain't the Caribbean, is it? No, it certainly isn't the Caribbean. So, this episode, we are going to have a little lesson in English history. Just a little bit. There's some fascinating stories that changed the course of, well, history. But before all of that, we need a what? What do we need? Come on, everyone. Yes, you're right. We need a theme. I'm thinking about a theme for today. And one thing that just keeps popping up in my mind is, for a very, very long time, if you ask me to describe myself, you know, give me a trait of myself. For a very long time, and I still do say it, I'm stubborn. That's the first thing that I'll say. I am a stubborn soul. I know what I know. We all do that. And there are certain things that I'm absolutely, nope, that's the only way it's to be done, and that's the way I feel about that, that's it. I can be open. I try to be open, especially in that work and within relationships, with regards to other people's opinions and thoughts. But I described that to someone. Someone asked me that question a while ago now, about a year ago or so, you know, and I said stubborn. And as I described to them what stubbornness means to me, how that is, they said, Darren, you're not stubborn, you're just confident. And that was really interesting perspective to hear from somebody who has really suffered for a very long time with low confidence, low self-esteem, for somebody to say, no, actually, Darren, that's your confidence. Helped me kind of look at things a little bit differently as to why I might react in a certain way, why I might think in a certain way. Just trying that perspective of, is that stubbornness or is that just confidence? I'll try and just explore that a little bit more today. What would be your trait? What's the one thing that you say when people ask you that, you know, to describe yourself? What's the first thing that comes to mind for you? So we have just turned right off the sea front and we're heading inland now. Heading north up towards Battle. So basically walk down and do get to St. Leonard's. They are pretty much just one. I'm right next to here too, West St. Leonard's railway station, train station. But immediately, you know, as soon as, literally, a 2-minute walk off the seafront. And if you didn't know the sea was there, you'd think you were in the middle of the English countryside. Already it's very, very delightful. As you can hear, hopefully, from all the birds, the morning chorus, and the train. So, let's have a chat about William the Conqueror, shall we? Born 1028 in Normandy, France. Died 1087 in Normandy, France. Reigned as the King of England from 1066 until his death in 1087. His dad was Robert the First, Duke of Normandy, very powerful. But his mum was the daughter of a local tanner. So, and they weren't married when William was born. So, an illegitimate child. Crowned Duke of Normandy in 1035, and if you do the maths from what I said there, he was only 7 years old. So because he was only seven and he was an illegitimate child, there was quite a lot of challenges to his right to rule as the Duke. And there were many attempts over the next several years to take William's life.
His great uncle, Archbishop Robert, looked after William, but it was mostly Henry I of France, with his support, that William was able to keep his title. He nearly lost his title again when he gets into his 20s to his cousin Guy of Burgundy. Guy had gathered quite a bit of support and formed an army to try and defeat William. He met him at the Battle of Valles Dunes in 1047, where he defeated Guy, and then that's where he really begins to start to get his control over Normandy, and he'd sort of really over the next few years really starts to consolidate his power. Fought down another revolt by Geoffrey Martel, and basically by 1060 he's got full control of Normandy. He marries Matilda of Flanders. That was back in 1050. So we've got the, and then thinking about coming over to England, you've got Edward the Confessor dies in 1066, and he didn't have an heir to the throne, but William is related through Edward's uncle, Richard II. So William claims that Edward had promised to leave him the crown, but there's other obviously other claims to that crown. One of them was the most powerful at the time, Harold Godwinson, and the people wanted Harold as king, so they crowned him King Harold II on January the 6th, 1066. Literally the day after King Edward had died. Now, I just need to make sure I'm on the right track here as I'm talking to you. Yep, we're good. In a lovely little wooded area now. We're walking up alongside the railway at the moment. And, like I said, you would not know that the sea was just over there. Harold becomes king. But like I said, there was a lot of other claims to the crown. You've also got King, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Hardrada of Norway. He tries to invade England. And while that's happening, Harold is concentrated on Norway. William sees his chance and plans to invade. He comes over with his troops. He lands in Pevensey, which is just along the coast. It's about 5 or 6 miles west of Hastings. So that's where he lands and starts marching up, knowing that Harold's men are going to be in this area, and we'll walk up to the place where they met. So that's a little bit about William. I touched on Harold there. We'll have a talk about Harold in a bit. But yeah, walking through this lovely little wooded area at the moment, and there's lovely little they look like little cow parsley, little tiny white daisies on either side of the pathway. It looks beautiful.
It was already turning out to be another glorious day of walking. I was settled, confident, enjoying learning more about myself, about the country that I call home. The day, though, would not go exactly as I planned.
Again, I'm using the OS Maps app to show me the route, and it's such a good resource. I mean, oh, little squirrel just darted out in front of me, running along as a blue tit. Oh no, actually that's a great tit. Oh, gorgeous. Yeah. I do know me tits. It's lovely. You just tap it on and follow it. Yeah, I think I've mentioned before there are a couple of times when you go to places and you lose signal on your phone. But it's such a great resource. There's so much there, and you can add to it. People are adding to it all the time. And this is just a lovely little... I'm in Coombe Valley at the moment, and it's just a delightful wooded area. All sorts of and shapes, sizes of trees, so you can hear the birds. Some snowdrops up here, coming up here on the left. It's just gorgeous. I've just sung the praises of OS Maps, and now I'm going to tell you about one of the problems with it. You might get a route like this one that I'm on at the moment that was done a while ago, and since it's been done, access has changed. I come to a point here where I should be walking alongside, staying alongside the railway line, but you can't, there's a big fence there, so you can't go that way anymore, so I'm just going to have to cut down and through. And probably mentioned it a few times, and you probably all know, especially if you're in the UK, I've had quite a wet winter, and although it hasn't rained significantly for a while, this path that I'm on now, it's really slippy and really muddy. I mean, really muddy. It's to the extent that it's just big ruts, big holes of where people have walked. And there's sticks over here. Maybe I can stand on them. Uh-oh, this could go very, very wrong. Ooh, ooh, crikey. Oh, okay, not too bad, a little bit wet, but the stones, yeah, it's, so I am at a point, oh wow, okay, so it wants me to go down that way, how the hell, it wants me to walk down this area, which is just a little stream. That isn't going to work. Okay. So which way do we go? Wow. It wants me to follow that stream. But there's absolutely no path going that way. It's too overgrown. All right. I'm just going to have to keep going this way, I think. This is going to be... Yeah, there is no way I'm walking that way. Okay, this should be interesting now, because looking ahead, I don't see where this road, this particular path, joins up with the path that I need to get to Battle. But we'll figure it out. It's an adventure, isn't it?
The first hiccup of the day. Now I say first. Let's see what else happens. Again, I am so lucky to have so much within a short drive of where I live. Nature started to work its magic on me, and I went all poetic.
Now come out and I'm in an area which is more open. It's a very... wet area. There's a stream, a brook alongside me now, and it's quite flat, but also a little bit rolling. That kind of doesn't make sense, does it? But yeah, rolling hills, kind of in like Teletubby land, but there's lots of low-level trees and stuff. But I'm reminded of a little line from Shakespeare: "One touch of nature makes the whole world kin." As I'm sort of like traversing my way across this landscape, and I'm able to breathe in the serenity of the wilderness, of the nature around me, my stubbornness, which we are now likening to confidence, is a little bit humbled just by the beauty and the vastness. I mean, I'm stood here. I can see a few houses if I look back, but looking forward, you can hear the plane up above, but I don't see any recognition of mankind. I mean, yeah, you can say, well, the whole area is like this because of mankind, because we've of agriculture and farming. But it's just that, you know, the little whisper of the wind. You can hear all those birds. There's a magpie that's following me along. He's about 30 feet in front. He just keeps bouncing out and bouncing along. There he is. She. It's just, you get this like harmonious union of me as a human being and nature in all of its wonder, and it just softens me with its gentle embrace. Yeah, sorry, I'm getting all sort of like soft. It's done it to me again. It's taken me, turned right off the flat land, the raised land of Coombe Valley, and wants me to go up through the wetland, basically. And there's one area here where there's just no way around it. I'm just going to have to go through the middle of it, I think. It is soaking, and it's like literally like a foot deep of water. I'm looking around and there is absolutely no way through that. No way around it. If I come around this side, it's just reeds and water. If I look further along, if I walk further along, there's another path there, but I don't know if I can get to it because there's a dike that you got to go over. So do I walk along and see if I can, because we absolutely have to go north now. Yeah, there's no point going further west. So it's either walk along and see if I can get over that bit, but I don't know how I would. I think I'm just going to have to go through the wet. All right, here goes nothing. Yeah, it's just all mud. I think I'm going to go back and see if I can walk around. This is going to take an extra long day now. So there very clearly is a pathway coming down here, and it's just a barbed wire fence. There is a gate, but the gate is overgrown. And on the other side of the overgrown gate is the barbed wire fence as well. So the only way for me to do that was to clamber through the barbed wire fence. Anyway, I am through. I'm on another road pathway now. A lady walking a dog. I think now, hopefully, this should take me down, and eventually I should hit the path that is on the OS maps.
So I managed to navigate the water, the lack of paths, and the barbed wire fences. It was certainly proving to be a challenging walk, but one that I relished overcoming. Again, as I walked, the surrounding countryside made me, well, it forced me to reflect.
Walking past a field now full of buttercups, I remember picking them as a child and holding them underneath your chin to see if you liked butter. If it reflected the yellow, then you did like butter. I remember doing that a lot as a kid with my siblings. It was a lot of fun. Wouldn't work now with the old beard. Did a production in 2007 in London. Les Enfants de Paradis. And the director wasn't sure what he wanted me to do. So he said, just grow the beard and then, like, as we get closer to the time, we'll decide what we want to do. Anyway, we had this session where we sort of like shaved it down a bit. Then we sort of took off the middle bit, so I had great big sideburns and a goatee. And he was like, nah. He was like, take the sideburns off. So I took sideburns off, goatee. He was like, nah. He's like, how about just remove the bottom of the goatee and just have a huge handlebar moustache? And that's what we ended up going with. Had this huge handlebar moustache. And I kid you not, I had several people mistake me for Morgan Spurlock, the supersize me guy. Literally had three people ask me for an autograph, thinking that I was him. And then several people just coming up to me and speaking Polish, as they thought I was Polish. Another area of my stubbornness, or if it's just probably just being stupid, is water, drinking water, especially when I'm on a hike. I'm really bad at doing that. I'm like, I'll just do it in another half an hour. I'll just stop. I don't want to stop because I want to keep going. I want to keep getting there. And if I stop for a minute and drink some water, it's going to take up so much time. Stupid. Just drink your water. So I just had to stop there and had a nice drink of water, which was lovely. So is that stubbornness? Is it stupidness? What is it? It's me just, again, in this world of like, now. Oh, I've got this walk to do and I need to get to battle. Just keep going. Like, no, just stop. I'm about halfway there now.
I may make light of that last point, but seriously, I do need to drink more water. Now, back to history. As I was walking up, I had a thought about Harold II. Harold Godwinson, son of Godwin. Godwin. Now, it just came to me that my good friend David Oakes recently played Godwin in Vikings Valhalla. So, I sent him a message, just to make sure that I was on the right track with all of my knowledge. And he got back to me.
Hi Darren, yeah, Harold Godwinson, who was king for, I think, just shy of 6 months in the end, until he was shot in the eye by an arrow on the Bay of Tapestry in 1066, was the son of Godwin of Wessex. Godwin of Wessex had three notable sons and a few daughters. Although one of his daughters married the previous king to Harold Godwinson. It's all very incestuous and transatlantic, all very modern. But yeah, no, they were very, very much related. One was father, one was son. And if Vikings Valhalla got to season 4 and 5 and 6, then we may have found out a bit more about that lineage. But I think the BBC are currently shooting a TV show that's about to go into the William the Conqueror, Harold Godwinson stuff in a bit more, I say depth, but it's television, you heard how deep it gets. Superficially interesting history. There you go. Enjoy. Bye.
Harold becomes, well, he's basically the last Anglo-Saxon king of England. He did become an earl himself. He was the Earl of East Anglia in 1045, and then succeeded his father as the Earl of Wessex in 1053. He adds Hereford to his territories in 1058, and pretty much at that time he's more powerful than the King of England himself. He was shipwrecked in Normandy in 1064, and that starts the rumours that at that point then he meets William, Duke of Normandy, and there's speculation that at that point Harold had sworn an oath on the holy relics that he would support William's claim to the throne upon the death of Edward the Confessor, who was childless. He ends up being elected King of England by an assembly of noblemen. Harold dies on the 5th of January 1066, Edward dies on the 5th of January 1066, and Harold's chosen as the king and becomes king on the 6th of January 1066. He defeats a large Viking army under the command of Harald Haradarda, I probably pronounced that completely wrong, at the Battle of Stamford Bridge. And then he ends up marching his army 200 miles in a week when he hears that William has crossed the channel and is on his way over. So he gets there and he's obviously defeated by William on the 14th of October 1066 at the Battle of Hastings. I'm just coming up to battle now, so let's go and have a look. Hey Siri. Define confidence.
Confidence means the feeling or belief that one can have faith in or rely on someone or something. Do you want to hear the remaining one?
Yes.
It means the telling of private matters or secrets with mutual trust.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
I don't use Siri that much. And as I was driving over today, I had a thought and I thought, oh, can I do that? And obviously hands-free, just shouted it out and it found it and left it there. Oh, the wonders of modern technology. I always thought as an actor, it's a difficult, fine line of showing confidence, because it sometimes can be strewed as arrogance if you are overconfident. Can you be over ambitious? People talk about, oh, he's too ambitious. Is that a bad thing? It can be, can't it? It can be construed, but people tell you, you know, to be ambitious. So where are these lines with regards to stubbornness, confidence, ambition? Where's the lower limit and where's the upper limit? So my lunch of choice today is sandwiches with Brussels style pate. That's what it said on the tin. Well, actually on the box. I remember. Oh, that's nice. Growing up and like 70s, 80s. Pate was the starter of choice. It was either pate and toast or a prawn cocktail. I would usually go for pate. And it's one of those things that I kind of forget about now. And it's always there in the sandwich, like, aisle. You know, the aisle where you have all the, like, the ham and the corned beef and stuff. Slices. There's always pate there. And I was like, oh, yeah. Sure as that. So. And it's very nice. And then the crisps of choice today, have been decanted into their own little plastic bag because, oh, I can't get in. There it is. I got a sharing pack, and these are onion rings. The thing with onion rings is I can just keep eating them. I won't stop because they're basically just air. And you bite them and it just sort of like disintegrates. So if I brought the whole packet, the sharing packet, I would eat it all. So I just decanted about 20. Actually, probably it's more like 30.
I finally made it to Battle. Battle Abbey is now part of the English Heritage, so I paid and went in for a look around.
So inside the Abbey grounds now, they got school inside here. So if you go to school here, you don't have to you have to pay to come in. So the abbey was built, they say the altar is on the site of where Harold died. They just left him. They didn't sort of want to like recognize or what's the word? I guess that's the ultimate thing in battle, isn't it? We defeat you, we just leave you. So the altar to the abbey is supposed to be where he left. And then William comes back several years later and they build the abbey on top of it. So little walled garden here. Wander around. It's very peaceful and very quaint. Let's walk down to the actual battlefield where it took place. I mean, all of this would have been the battlefield. So there's a little battlefield walk. You come down here in front of the abbey and it just opens up and you can see the steepness of it. So, you know, pretty much where the abbey, that's the highest ground. That's where the English would have been. That's where Harold would have been. And most of his soldiers, I mean, we're talking a couple of thousand soldiers involved in the actual battle. Would have used giant axes and shields, and they would have formed a shield wall. Let's get through this. You coming through?
Thank you.
There you go. You all right? Yeah. Oh, God, I got it. There you go. That's all right. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. You good? Okay. Thanks. So they would have formed a shield wall, which was very, very effective. It really, really did the job. This is just a field now with sheep, lots of sheep. And the William and his army would have been at the bottom, down where the trees are now. And they would have been in three lines. They would have had the line of archers, the soldiers, and then the mounted knights on their horses. And they would have come up this hill and they would have tried to get through the shield wall of the English, and they weren't doing very successfully. And then a rumour goes around that William is dead, that he's been killed. So this rumour starts, and so the Normans start to retreat. They start to run down, And the English get this sense of, we were winning, and they break ranks and they start to chase after them. And there's a hole in the shield wall. It breaks down, the shield wall breaks down. And William pulls off his helmet and goes, no, I'm alive, I'm still here. And the Normans go, oh, he's still fighting. All right, go on, turn around. And they turn around and obviously the shield wall's down and they are able to get through. And then famously Harold gets the arrow in the eye.
It happened exactly like that. The arrow in the eye. The battlefield was really an interesting place to visit. I was loving being here and soaking it all up.
There's a really cool statue here of a Norman archer, a Norman bowman, kneeling down, aiming his bow. It's in wood. That's really cool. Firing up at the abbey. I'll take a picture. I'll pop it on my blog, I think. It's really cool. And then there's another one of a soldier stood over there with his shield on his back. It looks like he's in prayer. Yeah, staying... This battle went on for quite a while. It started in the morning. And it was clear to the Normans that the English weren't going to be defeated very well, so they kept on feigning these flees, you know, fleeing away to try and open up the actual shield wall so that the English soldiers would pursue them. And like I said, it did work when they thought that William was dead, when they thought, oh, we've really got them now. It's quite interesting being here. And it's just a field now. But what a significant thing happened here. 1,000 years ago. Nearly 1,000 years ago. I don't like dwelling on the past, but I think history is so important of us to be able to learn from it and study it and figure out why that happened and why didn't it happen and stuff. It's fascinating. It's really cool, really well laid out here. So I have got my latte. I am sat at the barista and the shack. It's a very calm day here in Hastings, right on the beach here. That was a lovely walk. Like I said, all things happen for a reason. Highly recommend going to battle. The place, not the action.
The day was full of twists and turns. Several times getting lost or just being able to find a way through. And one thing I missed out. I took a little tumble about 3 hours into the walk. I wasn't recording at the time. I had my Zoom H5 in my hand and it smacked down into the mud. I thought that I had lost all of my recordings. It was only when I got back home that I was able to have a look at it and everything was where it should be. All was well, apart from a few scratches and bruises. It was another marvellous walk and I highly recommend a visit to Battle. It does make you ponder and contemplate. The Story Pilgrim was written by me, walked by me, it's me, it's Darren. Amazing music by Anya Backer on Shaun the Harp, and this episode I'd like to thank my amazing friend David Oakes for that little insight into Godwin and Harold II. Please follow, like, review and share this podcast. I need more ears. Let's gather them together. Keep listening, and buen camino.